Thanks for joining us today on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here. On the show today, we're talking about the new Leonardo da Vinci exhibit at the History Museum in Appleton. And pleased to have with us the museum's chief curator, Dustin Mack. And as we talk with Dustin, I hope you'll join in. Have you seen the exhibit? Have you visited the History Museum? What questions do you have about maybe staging museum exhibits? Love to have you part of the conversation. Give us a call, the number 1-800-642-1234, 800-642-1234, or send us an email to ideas@wpr.org. Dustin Mack, welcome to the show. Thanks for taking time to be with us today.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me, Larry.
How'd you get involved in museum work?
I fell into this on accident, actually. So I went to school. I got my PhD in American history, and I thought I was going to be a professor. And the more I got into doing that work and thinking about what it is I wanted to do with my life, it was really important to me to reach as many people as possible and to help them understand history. Because in my life, growing up, history, learning our history, kind of helped me see the world in a new way. And I wanted to do that for other people. And so the more I got to thinking about being a college professor, which is important and good, versus being in public history and working at a museum, the number of people that I could reach on an annual basis was just so much larger in museum work. And so I began looking at museums, and that's eventually what brought me to Appleton.
So what does a curator do?
We get to do just about everything, which is good for me. So my responsibility is any exhibit that is brought to the museum or created into the museum. It's my job to do the creative work behind the storytelling and choosing the artifacts and the research, anything up all the way through the design of the exhibit and the layout. A chief curator is also responsible for all of the artifacts that are housed in the museum. So the History Museum, for example, has over 20,000 artifacts in our collection, most of which are not on display at any one time. Over, about 90% of all artifacts are kept in storage. And even though people don't see that part of our job, it's really critical that we maintain these artifacts at the right temperature and that they're comfortable with low light levels, because that's helping to preserve them for the next generation.
Hmm. Well, here we've got the History Museum at the castle. It's celebrating 150 years. That's the anniversary this year, if I'm not mistaken. That's quite a milestone. Give us a little of the history of the museum.
Sure. So the History Museum was founded February 22nd, 1872. So this is the 150th anniversary. And when it was formed, it was created as a pioneer association. So it was a number of Euro-American settlers who had come to the area, and they basically wanted to get together and reminisce about what they considered to be the good old days. And so they had a picnic and got to talking about, the past, and they decided to kind of formalize their arrangement and create this association. And ever since then, the organization has been meeting annually and documenting the region's history. And eventually, that Pioneer Association became the County Historical Society, and that's what we continue today, although we use the name History Museum at the Castle.
Yeah, and where did that at the castle part come from?
So in the mid-1980s, this organization moved into a former Masonic temple. And so the Masonic temple was built almost 100 years ago, and it was designed to look like a castle. So all the smart marketing people got together and they thought, what's noticeable on College Avenue? And it was the big castle building. And so that's why it's History Museum at the Castle.
Oh, man. Well, you said you got 20,000 artifacts, but maybe not the collections that are housed.
Yeah. So anything that is related to local history falls within our scope, and that's something that we would collect and be interested in. So, for example, if it relates to Appleton, Outagamie County, or the Fox Valley, that would be something of interest to us. Or if it was used or owned by somebody who was from this area, that would fall within our scope. So we have everything from wedding dresses and military uniforms, dishware. We have all kinds of equipment that would have been used in different factories in the area, or just personal items that help tell a story about, you know, somebody who lived in the past, whether it's glasses or a wallet or maybe just a piece of clothing. Anything that can help us tell a story and help other people, you know, connect to the past.
Yeah, and some famous people. Houdini comes to mind.
We are most well known for our Houdini collection. That's right. So around town, we're often referred to as the Houdini Museum because we have a large artifact collection for Harry Houdini. So we have his handcuffs, manacles on his legs, lock picks, keys. We have a straitjacket, all kinds of different artifacts that Harry Houdini used throughout his career.
And he was originally from Appleton, right? Is that?
That's right. So he was actually born in Budapest, Hungary, and then immigrated to Appleton when he was about 4 years old. And he lived here for 4 years as a child. And he always thought of Appleton as his hometown and remembered it very fondly, even though he moved to Milwaukee and New York City and a bunch of different places in between throughout his lifetime. He always remembered Appleton very fondly and would claim it as his hometown.
Well, let's turn our attention to the Da Vinci exhibit. It's one of the current exhibits. And I believe this is the second time the exhibit has been at the museum. Why would you bring it, or why bring it back?
That's a great question. So there was a Da Vinci exhibit at the History Museum about 10 years ago, and it was our most popular exhibition of all time. People just loved that exhibit. It was called Da Vinci Machines in Motion. And people came out and they still talk about it and think about that exhibit today. And so as we were preparing for our 150th anniversary, we wanted to do something special for people. And we were thinking about the last 2 years during the pandemic and being locked down and not being able to do what we wanted and what, you know, go out and see different things. And we thought, why not bring back an exhibit that was the most popular thing that people are still asking for? Give the people what they want. And so we reached out and found this is actually a slightly different Da Vinci exhibition. So this one is called Da Vinci The Exhibition. So the scope is slightly different, but the content is much the same. And so we're excited to have it on display and bring people back to see it.
So what do visitors see when they go through the exhibit?
This exhibition is a stunner. So there's 60 different inventions that Da Vinci created throughout his life, which is often kind of overlooked. He was a very creative mind in coming up with things for military applications, civil engineering, hydraulics. And a lot of his inventions were so cutting edge that they weren't even built in his time. So they didn't have the materials or the skills to create what he had dreamed up. So it's only, you know, now with modern tools that we're able to create some of these inventions and have them on display for people to check out. But there's also his artwork in this exhibition, and that's what makes it different from the previous Da Vinci exhibition that we had. So there's replicas of the Mona Lisa and the Last Supper and a number of his pieces of work that are really inspirational.
So these designs that they were extraordinary designs. He thought of things that weren't invented, as you say, until hundreds of years after after his death. I know I was thinking because we have following you, the weather guys will be coming on, and I'm going to talk with them a little bit more about Da Vinci, but he was kind of like the first meteorologist.
Absolutely. So he was trying to measure humidity in the air. He was trying to create conditions where he could measure air density. He was a really a pioneer, well ahead of his time. So he, part of the reason he was interested in the weather related things is he was curious if man could fly. And so he would study birds and create all kinds of different flying machines in different sketches and imagine the force behind the air and the weather conditions that would need to be present in order for there to be a contraption that lifted man up into the air so they could fly like birds.
Yeah, it was amazing. I noted there was something. He literally was the first to identify hurricanes, and it wasn't until I think it was 1970s that meteorologists kind of rediscovered it, or the vortex flow patterns, I guess. It's something that he came up with. It's just absolutely amazing to me. And now the inventions themselves, each one at the exhibit was handcrafted, if I'm not mistaken. Explain that process.
So Da Vinci sketched most of his ideas in notebooks, which are called codices. And so these notebooks, after his death, kind of scattered around to different friends or collectors, and they were kept in storage and kind of out of public view for, you know, some of them for hundreds of years. But in the late 1800s and early 1900s, they became, you know, people were kind of bringing these back and they were becoming more public. And so the idea behind a Da Vinci traveling exhibit kind of came to light, and they hired a bunch of trained artisans and carpenters to build Da Vinci's exhibits based from his drawings. And so they were able to match what he had drawn and then build them with wood or steel or whatever it was to make Da Vinci's designs come to life in a way that even Da Vinci never saw them, right? They were only ideas for Da Vinci, and now we get to see them actually built and understand how they might function.
That's absolutely amazing. Dustin Mack, our guest today, he is the chief curator for the History Museum of the Castle in Appleton. We're talking about, certainly about the History Museum itself, but zeroing in a little bit on the Da Vinci exhibit. And I hope you'll join in with your questions or comments. Maybe you had a question about Da Vinci. What do you think? What questions do you have about his inventions? Or maybe what have you been to the exhibit? I hope you'll join in with your questions or comments about that, or maybe about the museum itself. Number to call is 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234, or you could email us the email address ideas@wpr.org. ideas@wpr.org. Jill Dedoe's our producer today. Trina LaSousa, our engineer. I'm Larry Mueller. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We're having some fun talking about the Da Vinci exhibit, Leonardo Da Vinci exhibit, at the History Museum at the Castle in Appleton with our guest today, Dustin Mack. He's the chief curator for the History Museum at the Castle. And I hope you'll join in with your questions or comments. Number to call is 1-800-642-1234, or you could email us to ideas@wpr.org. Let's go to Joshua in Viroqua. Joshua, thank you for calling.
Hello. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure. What's on your mind?
Well, what's on my mind is this: with this thought of Leonardo da Vinci's machines actually being built and worked on out of his codices, there was a choral work put together by Eric Whitaker, a contemporary of us all. It's this amazing, amazing choral piece called Leonardo Dreams of His Flying Machine. And it is this transcendent musical piece, and I just think it would fit right in with the theme.
Oh.
Have you ever heard of it?
Have you heard of that, Dustin?
No, I haven't heard of it. But Da Vinci's flying machines are a critical part of this exhibition, and there are some some rather large pieces that we have suspended over our gallery right now. So they, some are swooping and others are diving. Leonardo da Vinci also invented a parachute. So that is coming down from the ceiling. And so that piece would fit very well in that gallery, I suspect.
So it's Leonardo dreams of his flying machines. Is that right, Josh?
Correct. Joshua? By Eric Whitaker.
Eric Whitaker. Well, probably, I don't know if it's too late to add that, but it might be worth a listen, Dustin, and maybe that's something that could be piped in at one point or another.
I'll absolutely look into it and see what I can find on that piece. It's interesting when you add audio behind an exhibition, it changes the feel and how people interact in a space. So if you go into a gallery and it's quiet, by default, people seem to whisper and walk on tiptoes as they go through. But if there's a little bit of background music, they become a little bit more lively and speak more comfortably. So there is definitely a place for sound in exhibitions.
Yeah, that's for sure. And the exhibit, by the way, let's give that number again. It's 1-800-642-1234 or email us to ideas@wpr.org. I was going to ask about the ability of people to maybe handle, or I mean, is it an don't touch anything, or are there ways that people can kind of interact with some of it?
Yeah, absolutely. One of the beauties of this exhibition is that a lot of the inventions that were built are hands-on. And so they're mechanical pieces, and you can see and move a handle to see how a crank would spin. Da Vinci was a pioneer in using pulleys and different styles of a pulley system. And so people can interact with that. He imagined the first tank for military applications. And so there's a large tank in the middle of our gallery right now. And so that's built so that people can climb inside and see what it would be like in there. And there's just a number of different pieces where people can interact with Da Vinci's inventions and be hands-on in a way that, again, he didn't even get to do in his own lifetime.
Yeah. How would they have, how did he envision that tank moving around?
So it's on a series of wheels, and he has the design in such a way that the tank would be able to move in any direction and then fire multiple guns at once. Granted, the tank is made out of wood because in his time that was the most accessible source of building materials. And so, yeah, it's funny because that was the one thing I wasn't so sure we were going to be able to get in the building as this exhibit was moving in, but we took it apart and we rebuilt a tank, which not every chief curator can say.
Oh, let's go to Kel in Sugar Camp next. Hi, Kel.
Hi. I was wondering, where this exhibit originated? Did you guys build it yourself, or did it come from someplace else? And I also wanted to mention that silly movie, Hudson Hawk, where Leonardo's machines are all, used by the bad guy in the movie to try to take over the world. It was really great. And at the end, the good guys fly out on Leonardo's flying machine. It was really a fun movie.
Oh, that's wonderful. So the exhibit came from Imagine Exhibitions, which is an exhibit design firm out of Atlanta, Georgia. And so this is a nationally traveling exhibition that's owned by somebody else. And the History Museum reached out to them, and you rent these traveling exhibits for a number of months, and then they'll pack up and they move on to the next place to try to maximize the number of people that can see them, you know, across the country. And some of the larger versions even travel around the world.
That is very cool. Kel, thank you so much for calling. Appreciate it. Do you have a favorite display?
My favorite part, so the Mona Lisa is in this exhibition, which is fantastic. I really enjoy seeing that. But I think my favorite part is the diving suit that Da Vinci created. So he was so far ahead of his time. They were still trying to determine you know, they were, this isn't, he's living about the time that Christopher Columbus is going off and discovering North America and South America and bringing this information back to Europe. And Da Vinci is thinking about discovering what's under the ocean. And so he created a diving suit that worked with, it was a leather suit that had a face mask and goggles so that you could see what you were doing, of course. And then there was a pipe that went from the diver's mouth up to a leather bag that would sit above the ocean. And that would be a way that they could breathe. And so a replica of that design is in the exhibit right now. And to me, that's just kind of the most interesting part, because he was such a fascinating thinker. And that's what that piece represents to me.
Oh, man, that is really cool. You mentioned the Mona Lisa, and of course, his paintings, not forgotten. What did you learn about some of his greatest works?
His brushwork, I'm not a trained artist, but his brushwork is really phenomenal. So he did a number of things differently than other painters had up until that time, where he worked with layering paint. And so he would brush the same spot multiple times with different colors and different shades of paint, which added depth to his paintings that prior to that time just weren't there. It wasn't something that artists did. And he also pioneered the positioning of his subject. So he would have people sit at a quarter turn or a three-quarter turn angles, which gave them more lifelike features, so he could add depth and dimension to their face. And they really became more lifelike paintings. And that's why he became kind of a master painter.
And the paintings of, for example, the Mona Lisa, which is actually a fairly small painting. Isn't it about 14 inches or something like that?
It's not real large, no. It is on display at the museum, and it's the nice thing here is because this is a replica, people can get up close to it and they can see it and interact with the painting in a way that you couldn't do if you went to the Louvre, for example, and saw the original.
Yeah. And in this copy, were they able to sort of get that that same effect that Da Vinci actually did in his painting?
They did, surprisingly. So I was going through this morning, actually, admiring the artwork that's in the gallery, and they were able to copy that depth. And I'm not sure exactly how the exhibition company did this, but the paintings are so lifelike. I mean, you can't tell, one, that it's a replica, but also it really captures the artistry that Da Vinci had with, like I said, with his brushwork and with the backgrounds behind his subjects. It all comes to life, and with the proper lighting and positioning of the painting, it's really a joy to take in.
Yeah, I can't wait to get up there to visit. It's the what other paintings are included?
So the Last Supper is also on display as part of the exhibit. What people don't know about the Last Supper is that it's a massive painting. Yeah. So it's about 15 feet high and 30 feet long. And they have a replica of that in the exhibition, but it was simply too large for our ceilings. We couldn't get it in the building and have it fully on display. So we had to make a pared down version of the Last Supper, one that was going to actually fit in the building, which is always a positive. So people can admire that and see that artwork. And then there's about 15 other paintings and works of art that he did throughout his life that are on display throughout the building.
He was also interested and studied anatomy. Does the exhibit tell us much about that part of his life?
It does. So Da Vinci was interesting in that he got himself into a bit of trouble with the Catholic Church, which was a powerful organization at the time and still is today. But what got him in trouble was he began, dissecting animals, but eventually human beings after their death in order to understand how the body functioned. He was just very interested in anatomy, and it's because of his work doing that we understand more about the bone structure, how muscles work together. And he was recording all of his observations in his work and in his journals and explaining why he was doing what he was doing and what he was learning. And because of that, we learned so much more about the human body and how it functions.
But the church was a little irritated with him.
The church was irritated with him. So he ran afoul of the church a couple times in his lifetime because he was, in their eyes, desecrating these bodies rather than using them for scientific purposes.
And so what can we see? I mean, are there his drawings of the anatomy? Is that what we'll see there?
That's correct. So there's drawings that he made of the anatomy, of the human anatomy, the most famous of which is the Vitruvian Man. So if that doesn't spring to mind right away, Google it and you'll have seen it before. So the guy has his arms extended in multiple different positions of his arms and his legs. And that's really in essence what Da Vinci, you know, came up with in learning about the human body and sketching these out for us to learn to this day.
You can join in too. Number to call 1-800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234. Or you could email us. The email address is ideas@wpr.org. ideas@wpr.org. Love to hear from you. His work. Well, before I talk about that, I want to just back up to the pandemic for a minute, because I imagine you're like a lot of places suffered a lot through the pandemic.
Yeah, the pandemic was hard on us. I mean, so much of what we do is interact with people on a daily basis and bring visitors into the building. And so when that had to stop, it drastically changed what it is that we were doing and how we were doing it. But fortunately, there was government assistance that helped people stay on the payroll and grant programs that helped museums and other institutions like ours kind of survive the downtimes, because so much of what we do is dependent on admissions revenue. Those programs help sustain us. And then, you know, we were able to do a lot of work inside the building, which we wouldn't normally get to do with visitors going through. The building was kind of torn apart. We restored a number of the windows. We did a lot of work on our artifacts and that sort of thing, which was actually nice that we could do that work and not disturb a visitor's experience in the building.
Yeah. So you made good use of that, as good a use of the time as you possibly could from the sound of it then. No, that's great.
We should try to.
Nancy in Milwaukee, let's go to you. Hi, Nancy.
Hello. I wanted to say that I have never understood this worldwide adulation of the Mona Lisa. I've seen the Mona Lisa in Paris several times, but I think the Leonardo painting of the woman with an ermine is so much more interesting to look at. It has so much more fine detail, and the expression on her face is every bit as provocative as Mona Lisa's is. So I've just never understood this worldwide attraction to that painting.
Well, I thank you for calling, Nancy. Comment, Dustin?
I'm with her on that one. The Mona Lisa is great, but I really don't understand the, like she said, the worldwide appeal. It's the most famous and it's the most photographed painting anywhere in the world. But he has a number of other just fantastic paintings. One of which Nancy mentioned is also on display here at the museum. And all of his subjects are so lifelike and so full of character and in the expression in their face and in their positions and the background behind them, that you can really just get sucked into a painting and imagine that person and what their life may have been like. And the Mona Lisa is certainly one of those, but it's not the only.
Nancy, thank you. Appreciate it. Peter in Stoughton, we'll go to you. Hi, Peter.
Good morning. Aside from the commissions that he received for his artwork, How did Da Vinci finance his other work? All that drawing, all that speculation, all that inventiveness, it had to pay for itself somehow.
Yeah. Good question, Peter.
Yeah.
Any idea on that, Dustin?
Yeah, that's an excellent point, Peter. So he had to pay the bills just like everybody else. And part of what he did was find rich patrons who were willing to basically subsidize his work. And at that time, Europe was very divided. There was warring states. There was warring cities. And so a major part of what Da Vinci did in order to fund his other endeavors was work as a military engineer. And so he invented cannons. He invented like the tank that I had mentioned before. He had military applications for bridges that could move and be used in wartime. He invented chariots that could be used for wartime. So basically he was paid for creating weapons of war, and that paid the bills so that he could do his painting and other inventions, which were really his passion.
Mm. So there you go, Peter. Thank you so much for that question. John and Boaz, on to you. John, thank you. John, are you there? Go ahead, John.
Da Vinci had a drawing of his flying machine. And I wondered if you guys could comment on how it was supposed to get lifted up in the air.
And the flying machine is in the exhibit, is it not?
That's correct. So there's a number of different flying machines that Da Vinci invented throughout his life. So going back to the study of anatomy, part of what he did was dissect birds to understand their bone structure and how they worked. And then he observed them in nature as well. And so a lot of his flying machines are based on the wing structure and the flight patterns of birds. And so what Da Vinci was trying to do is mimic that in his designs. So there's a flying machine where a man would lay flat and have wings essentially attached to his arms and then kind of flap to create air force down against the ground that would eventually, if done long enough and strong enough, create lift, which would bring the person up off the ground. That his initial ideas didn't work in that regards. It's not how the flight occurred. But that was part of the design of his flying machine. But he also created a glider that is very similar to the gliders we would see today. I mentioned the parachute before, which is essentially identical to what we have today. And a number of other flying inventions that he was essentially trying to copy the designs of nature.
Very, very cool. Where can listeners find out more about the museum itself? Let's talk about some of the basics. What's the cost of admission and things of that nature?
So the History Museum is open daily from 10 to 4, and we're based here on College Avenue in Appleton, Wisconsin. The admission for adults is $15, and children are $10. Kids under 2 are free to come to the museum. And all of this information is available on our website, which is myhistorymuseum.org.
And the events themselves, of course, the big event that you've got going on right now is the Da Vinci event, which I can promise you I'll be up there at some point. I'll look you up and say hi when I get there.
Please do.
Dustin, but there are other things to see in the museum as well?
Yeah, so what we're most well known for is our AKA Houdini exhibition. So it's an exhibit on Harry Houdini's life and career that really looks at the skill that it took for him to become a famous magician. And it gives people a hands-on dose, and they can try to escape a jail cell or a straitjacket, just like the great Harry Houdini.
That sounds like a lot of fun. Well, and frankly, it's been a lot of fun talking to you, Dustin. I want to thank you so much for taking time. And the exhibit's on now. It's going on right now. And how long does it runs through the summer at least?
It does. So the exhibit is on display now, and it will be up until September 19th. So people have a good chance to get out and take a look.
I'll be there with my daughter probably around the middle of July.
Wonderful.
Thank you, Dustin. I really appreciate it. Hope we can do this again.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me.
Dustin Mack is the chief curator for the History Museum at the Castle in Appleton. And I'm going to take Emily, and we're going to stop there on our way, on our travels this summer at some point. And we'll probably mention Leonardo da Vinci coming up because he, of course, is considered the first meteorologist. And we've got a couple of our weather guys, they're meteorologists, coming up next. And we'll talk with them about April weather and take a look ahead a little bit and also take a look back and just sort of look at how the winter actually went and what we can expect down the road. That next, our weather guys. I'm Larry Mueller.